Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, continuing with our in-depth, ongoing investigation on vaccines, a second opinion, part six. Let me quote verbatim from Time Magazine, October 2nd, year 2000, from a Leon Jaroff, and yet we're not told any of Mr. Jaroff's background. We don't know, is he affiliated with any of the pharmaceutical companies? Is he affiliated with any of the known quackbusters? We know nothing about him except his point of view. And since it's put in Time Magazine unchallenged, we have to accept that this is a rather mainstream point of view. He says, the anti-vaccine movement would be laughable if it weren't so dangerous. And I'll quote here some of the context. He says that it's back to school time, and because all states now require proof of student immunization, the anti-vaccine forces are again in full cry. Warnings about the dangers of vaccination abound on the internet, in the press, and in the literature of alternative medicine. Not only are vaccinations unnecessary to ward off epidemics of infectious disease, the critics charge, but they are also responsible for such scourges as AIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, and autism. Preposterous. Sure, but these theories are being taken seriously by parents and politicians. In Europe, such claims have led to significantly lower vaccination rates and new outbreaks of measles and diphtheria. British medical authorities warned that measles could become epidemic if rates of 3-in-1 MMR measles, mumps, and rubella shots continue to fall. In reality, the anti-vaccine activists demonstrate both medical illiteracy and an appalling ignorance of history. Unquote. And of course, he says that there is no connection between autism. Well, that's the official position, and that's why I'm doing this ongoing investigation. At no time am I relying upon the alternatives that he's suggesting, nor the internet. Rather, my facts come from qualified physicians, scientists, and mainstream peer-reviewed literature. The very literature that he is suggesting, by his statements here, would not support such a position. Let me begin our program today by quoting some verbatim from the National Vaccine Information Center, the spring and summer 2000 issue, Barbara Fisher, editor, and talking about autism and vaccines. I would also like to suggest that many eminent scientists, physicians, clinicians, and parents are concerned and do not simply suggest that, well, if my child was completely happy and healthy prior to the vaccine, and then a day after the vaccine, that joy no longer is present and there's serious side effects, that it couldn't have had anything to do with the vaccine because we're told that they're safe and effective. And also, what about all the school teachers and parents who are saying, but my child was vaccinated for the full regimen and came down with a very illness that they were vaccinated and supposed to be protected from? How did that protect them? They got their shots, 30 shots, and now they have the illness. And they have a very difficult form of the illness to deal with. Now their immune system's been compromised. What about the House of Representative hearings that were held under Congressman Dan Burton, who allowed people to come forward and challenge? Are we looking at the fact that anyone, no matter what their qualifications, who raises some issue that asks us to reevaluate the safety of these vaccines should be cavalierly and summarily dismissed as being a crackpot or a quack? This is the kind of irresponsible statement that Time Magazine is known for, protecting and supporting the status quo, especially the medical so. Let me give some quotes now from a Dr. Yazbek. And Dr. Yazbek, was responding to the British Medical Journal, Volume 356, number 9224, July 2000. And he says the following. This is just to show you the dialogue that goes on in the scientific community behind the public eye that you will not hear about. Sir, rather than clarify the measles, mumps, rubella, autism confusion with your editorial, you perpetrated the myth that good scientific evidence rejects the link between the MMR vaccine and autism. You quote Taylor and colleagues as publishing, quote, epidemiological evidence contradicting this alleged association, unquote. On March 28, 2000, I presented a talk at the Royal Statistical Society in which I showed how the currently published data, including that from this study, are consistent with an appreciable number of autism cases being triggered by the MMR vaccination. In short, Taylor and colleagues used the wrong study design to detect an association between immunization and the disease with chronic onset, such as autism. Rather than use a conventional case-controlled approach, the study used a case series design. The case series approach is appropriate for investigating acute adverse events, such as febrile convulsion, but is not suitable for long-term effectiveness of vaccination. Three possible proxy events for onset of autism were chosen: diagnosis, parents' first concern, and regression. Regression was recorded in less than a third of the cases and typically occurred 6 months after first concern. Diagnosis, on the other hand, typically occurred 2 years after first parental concern. The gastrointestinal model for autism described by Wakefield and others would suggest a variable delay for perhaps several months between immunization and first symptoms of autism. It is arguable whether we might expect first parental concern to predate these first symptoms. It's not surprising, then, that the study found no clustering of diagnosis within 1 or 2 years of immunization, when diagnosis would typically be delayed by more than 2 years. Time of first parental concern and time of regression have highly grouped values at about age 12 months, 18 months, and 24 months. This grouping reflects the slow progressive nature of onset of autism and the parent's difficulty in identifying a specific time of onset. That any true association would be spotted when looking at quite short intervals after immunization, typically 6 months, is unlikely. First parental concern is significantly increased in the 6 months after immunization. What we can conclude from this study is that either the MMR triggered autism is a rare event, or, as the model would suggest, it leads to a chronic onset of autistic symptoms. Like you, I wish to see a full scientific description of O'Leary and colleagues' study as soon as possible. But we must realize that the current epidemiological evidence does not refute MMR immunization, possibly triggering the onset of autism. In everyone's interest, we must keep an open mind. And that's just all. And by the way, that is followed by citations from the scientific literature. And there are many other articles that I have that I will not belabor this point, where people, physicians, and parents have written about how their children were completely normal until they got their MMR, and then they started to see these autism. And by the way, here's just one from the U.S. State Educational Data, Broward, Miami, and also in Illinois. There was a increase of 876% in 8 years in New Jersey in autism, 627% in 6 years in Illinois, a 13-fold increase, which would be 1,300% increase in 6 years in Colorado, 1,200% increase in 10 years in Broward, Miami, and so on. So how are we to explain a 1,000% increase in autism in such a short 5, 6, 7, 8 year period? And yet we do have something that associates with it, and that is the immunization, MMR, and this form. Let me just quote something. Many accounts given by parents are consistent. I watched my son descend from a perfectly normal toddler of 14 months to a mentally handicapped toddler of 16 months after measles vaccination. It was a powerful experience to observe this at very close hand. At 14 months, we could post square bricks through square slots. Only today, at 13 years, he still cannot do this. Another one. Why is every autistic child in the Shetlands and the West Isles of Scotland aged 12 years or under? Why not a single case among children ages 13 to 19? Is this significant, given that MMR was introduced in 1988, and that should be something we should pay attention to separately? Why did the Education Authority of Wakefield, West Yorkshire, UK, only have 5 autistic pupils in 1992 and 111 in 1999? Can a 2,200% increase in just 7 years be credibly explained simply by better diagnosis of condition? Another one. If there is a link with MMR, one might expect new variant autism to start showing up in offspring statistics. Why has autism among boys aged 3 years, in part of East Surrey, been running at 1 in 69 for the past 3 years? And by the way, that was from Clark Learning Disability Service, East Surrey Health Authority, Interpersonal Communication. These are all from people in hospitals that I've just quoted you. Do children such as my son have typical autism? I believe not. My son and many others like him do not possess the isolationist behavioral or self-injurious features. They also have acute multiple food allergies and hyperactivity, which they also acquired shortly after vaccination. So is this autism at all, or is it brain damage that only partially resembles autism? And is the damage to the brain directly linked to gut permeability, as seems to be the case in children such as my son and the children studied at by Wakefield and colleagues? What was this, and what was it that damaged the gut in the first place? And this is another one to The Lancet. Dear sir, your editorial, to use your own words, raises far more questions than it answers. Perhaps I can add a few more questions, plus some hard and disturbing facts to the debate. I should first mention that I am a parent of a child who became autistic after monovalent measles and MMR vaccination. And goes on to give some citations. Here's another one from another person. The MMR vaccine is said to be safe because there have been few reported adverse reactions. Yet degeneration into autism is not a recognized adverse reaction. The onset of autism after MMR has therefore not been monitored. Is it a new syndrome that has not been recognized and then been missed by most of the medical community? All of these pieces, the MMR autism jigsaw, fit together extremely well. They also fit well with the findings of the Wakefield O'Leary Scientific Group. And there are no features among the children of parents like myself, not one, that do not fit into the Wakefield O'Leary explanation. And so it goes. And that's just one of the individuals. Here's another father writing, a Raymond Gallup, and here's what he is saying to the editors of The Lancet. He's saying, sir, as father of a boy with autism, age 15 years, and as president of the Autism Autoimmunity Project, USA, I was interested by your editorial. I was at the autism vaccine hearings on April 6, 2000 in Washington, D.C., chaired by U.S. Congressman Dan Burton. These hearings were vital for those of us who have autistic children and want more immunology research to be done, such as that done by Dr. Wakefield and O'Leary and Singh and their colleagues. Existing research that denies an association between autism and MMR vaccine is either biased because it originates from public health authorities or uses flawed epidemiology, such as is the study by Taylor and colleagues. When asked at the hearings whether he could provide for independent scrutiny the data that backed up his study, Taylor said he would have to check with his superiors. Wakefield, Singh, and O'Leary agreed to provide their data and had no need to check with their superiors. Quite a difference in response. In April 1999, I attended an autism biomedical conference in Atlantic City and heard Jacqueline Bertrand of the Center for Disease Control talk about the incidence of occurrence of autism in Brick Township, New Jersey. I later asked her whether any of the children were not vaccinated. She said no. Brick Township was a highly vaccinated population. I asked her whether Center for Disease Control had done any immune panel blood test or planned to do so. Again, she said no. The CDC said they did not know what caused the increase in occurrence of autism in Brick, but that the MMR vaccine was not a factor. Where is the logic and where is the science to support this assertion? My son Eric was tested with an immune panel blood test and had raised measles titers. Also, Eric had inflammation of the colon. Many parents report that the same results with their autistic children. There are no independent long-term safety studies involving any of the vaccines given in such variety during childhood, MMR vaccine included, to assure us that nothing is wrong. Are our children now acting as unwitting participants for a safety study? Evidence of an autism pandemic is clear, especially in highly vaccinated countries. In California, there is a 273% increase in the number of autistic children in 1987 to 98. For BRIC, the CDC has documented that 1 in 149 children are autistic. In East Surrey, the UK, 1 in 69 children ages 3 are autistic. Eric goes to a special school for autistic children, which in 1992 had 20 pupils. Today, there are over 100. To say this increase in numbers of autistic children is a result of better diagnosis shows insensitivity towards parents who know their own children and the educational authorities entrusted with their educational long-term care. We need exhaustive research funded now. Do we wait until 1 in 5 children are diagnosed with autism? Can our communities afford the increase in human suffering and the dire economic consequences? To ignore the findings of Wakefield and Singh and O'Leary presented at the hearings will only worsen our dilemma. Raymond Gallup. And, of course, he follows his letter with detailed documentation. That's just to give you an idea that the whole discussion on this subject is not being carried forward as it should be. In other words, we are not. We are not just looking at some random parents who have no proof and no science, no medicine, just anecdote, and who are in the fringe. Not the case. And to give you just a few more things on vaccine that you probably are not aware of. This comes from a report that came through. In fact, I just read this today from parents requesting open vaccination education, and I think it's worth reporting. It says, about 1 month ago, I was contacted by a public health graduate student of epidemiology at the University of Illinois at Chicago, asking for our assistance to distribute questionnaires to our membership to participate in a study looking at the potential relationship between vaccines and asthma. She was simultaneously contacting other groups she found on the internet with similar missions to ours. At first, I was very excited because I know there are so many parents out there who feel strongly that a connection exists based on their own children. However, knowing that the headquarters for the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics, two organizations who support a one-size-fits-all approach to vaccination, are located in Chicago and a suburb of Chicago, respectively, naturally, I had some questions about the study. As our conversation progressed, my enthusiasm dwindled rapidly because some of her answers to my very specific questions and pointed questions produced conflicting answers, and showing the study would never be able to yield a conclusive result of a link between asthma and vaccines. This and other information from our conversation was very troublesome to me. In addition, our conversation revealed that the sampling methods are not adequately controlled. In an effort to appeal to us and protect respondents' confidentiality, the designers of the study have created the opening of a multi-phony questionnaires to be submitted, which could skew the results of the study. In addition to regular mail, the questionnaire will be available to download from a website and distributed by email. Downloaded completed surveys can be mailed in. This is about as reliable as public opinion polls posted on websites. This person asked every organization like ours in the informed consent movement for vaccinations who would be willing to participate to send her a statement confirming they would participate and forward the surveys to their members. This would tie each participating organization to the outcome of the study. I'll explain why that is a problem in a minute. The web page for her program listed where their graduates typically get jobs. These were some of the places listed: local and state health departments, pharmaceutical companies, health and maintenance organizations, academic institutions, and professional academies like the American Medical Association. Now, on a parallel note, please look at what the forced vaccination lobby has tried to do to establish researchers. And Dr. Wakefield and Dr. Singh, just because their research indicates a potential link between vaccines and autism, this person has not even graduated yet and has her entire career ahead of her. Think about her job prospects pending the results of her graduate study. Just try to imagine what the CDC, Merck, the AMA, and the Health and Human Services would do with her resume if she were to list in her credits that she has data to support a possible link between vaccines and autism or asthma. Knowing that, the organizations above, some of her best prospects for future employment would be totally discredit the results showing a link based on the uncontrolled methods of the survey. Why would she do this sort of study? When I asked her why she picked this topic, she informed me that originally the study was going to be more broadly based about causes of asthma, but her school approached her about focusing on the vaccine relationship. Why would her school want her to make her unemployable? Now let's look at this on the flip side. Think about her employment prospects and the positive exposure for her school if she was able to demonstrate that there is no link using the very data supplied directly from families who don't vaccinate their kids or who have a child who is damaged by vaccines. We could never be sure that the American Academy of Pediatrics didn't send in some completed surveys too. If we went back and challenged the data collection methods, we would look like a bunch of whiners because we agreed to participate in a study, but now we are just complaining about we didn't like the results. The CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the AMA, could publicly shut us down for years on this one by publishing that they proved there is no link with our own people. I'm not saying this is what will happen. I'm merely saying the potential exists, that it deserves to be approached with caution. I thought that was very intelligently done on her part. Generally, people don't think about the outcome of such things. They just go ahead and participate, thinking everything's objective. Here is something else. This is from the Star Ledger in New Jersey, and this is dated the 11th of this month. A Senate committee took the first step yesterday to blocking a requirement that children entering kindergarten, first to sixth grades, be vaccinated against hepatitis B virus. By a 4-1 vote, the Senate Legislative Oversight Committee approved a resolution saying that adverse reactions from the vaccine pose a greater risk to children than the disease. So you see, there is concern at all levels that vaccines could raise a lot more problems than they help to help solve. Let me read something specifically on autism, the brain, and the immune system. Quote, in the year 2000, the controversial hypothesis that autism is somehow linked with vaccination has set the stage for a long overdue examination of the interaction between the brain and the nervous system and the evidence for both disease and vaccine-induced immune and brain dysfunction, which has been documented in the medical and scientific literature for more than 200 years. After Bernard Rimland, an expert in the field in the 1960s, persuaded researchers to investigate the biological rather than the psychological cause of autism, Dr. De Meyer and her colleagues wrote in a 1973 journal of the Autism and Childhood Schizophrenia that the findings of their study, quote, in conjunction with other investigations, support the biological cause theory of autism, unquote. The authors noted that a high number of autistic children have, quote, gross EEG abnormalities, unquote, and are neurologically handicapped with learning and behavioral disorders that range from mild to severe mental retardation. They concluded that, quote, viral disease during or after gestation, birth trauma, malnutrition, oxygen lack, or generally any of the events known to cause damage to the brain may be a cause of autistic syndrome, unquote. In 1975, doctors Minklum and Isaf also found a high incidence of epileptic seizures in autistic children, indicating autism has an organic neurological basis. They were soon joined by other autistic researchers who asserted that the symptoms of autism are grounded in dysfunction of the nervous system. Dykin and McMahon, in 1979, in the American Journal of Epidemiology, agreed that the high rate of abnormal EEGs and seizures in autistic children suggested neurological damage. They pointed out that the central nervous system is not fully developed at birth and may be at special risk for brain damage from viral infections in the first year of life. They concluded that, quote, viruses with encephalopathic potential, especially those occurring during gestation or during the first few months of life, might be associated with the development of certain childhood mental illnesses, unquote. In 1982, Dr. Wiseman and his colleagues reported that some autistics have abnormal cell-mediated immune responses to myelin basic protein. That's a component of the brain myelin sheath, suggesting that an autoimmune mechanism may be involved in the development of autism. That report reinforced observations by Dr. Studs in 1976 that some autistic children have defective antibody responses to rubella vaccine, and in 1977 that autistic children have depressed T-cell responses. In 1984, in Pediatric Annals, Dr. Vito and Freeman described the medical model of autism and concluded, quote, the symptoms are due to neuropathology, which in turn may have a variety of causes, unquote. Observing that there are high rates of abnormal seizures and severe allergies and significant differences in the metabolism patterns and brain chemistry in autistic children compared to those who are not autistic, the autoimmune connection was made again by Dr. Reed Morin and his associates in 1986 when they presented evidence that confirms Dr. Stubbs' studies in the 1970s, indicating that autism is associated with immune system dysfunction. Warren stated, quote, the lack of superior cells in the autistic patients may be consistent with an autoimmune process underlying the development of autism, unquote. He concluded, our findings in the autistic patients are quite similar to those observed in a study of patients hospitalized for major depressive disorders, unquote. In 1987, Dr. Rutter and Slopler, writing in the Journal of Autism and Developmental Disorders, discussed the clear differences between adult schizophrenia and childhood autism, particularly the high rate of seizures and mental retardation in autistic children. They pointed out that there were two groups of autistic children, those babies who were abnormal behavior at birth and those who developed normally and then regressed, and added, quote, there is no one basic deficit because the disorder reflects varying patterns of organic brain dysfunction. By 1991, when the Institute of Medicine published adverse effects of pertussis and rubella vaccines, confirming that pertussis and rubella vaccines can cause brain damage and immune system damage, there were increasing numbers of parents responding that their previously normal children were regressing into autism after DPT and MMR vaccination. However, the Institute of Medicine Physician Committee, charged with analyzing the medical literature for evidence of cause and effect, rejected the reported link between pertussis vaccine and autism based on the fact that in the medical literature, quote, no data were identified that addresses the question of a relation between vaccination and DPT or the pertussis component in autism, unquote. Well, the lack of evidence in the medical literature directly connecting autism to vaccine is not surprising given the 40-year debate in autism research about whether the disorder was psychiatric or biologically based. The question of whether rubella vaccine could be causally linked to autism was not discussed in the 1991 Institute of Medicine report. The subsequent 1995 Institute of Medicine report, Adverse Effects Associated with Childhood Vaccines, also did not address the question of whether there were biologically plausibility that any of the components of the MMR vaccine or the vaccines could cause autism. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief station ID break. For our station around the country, we'll be back continuing with Part 6 of Vaccine, A Second Opinion.
And you're listening to WBAI FM in New York, 99.5. Mm-hmm. you've just joined us, I'm Gary Knoll, continuing with my special in-depth investigative report on vaccines, re-examining them, having a second opinion about weighing the risks and benefits. Do they work? In whom? What are the side effects? To what degree? And who's most susceptible? She was a California mom whose firstborn, a son named Garrett, was a happy, healthy, bright toddler until he got his MMR vaccine in 1990 when he was 13 months old and within 2 weeks began exhibiting autistic behavior. Cindy Goldberg says it was so gradual, I barely noticed it. He began to avoid eye contact. He lost language skills. He didn't see or respond to us and would only line up toys in front of him. At age 18 months, Garrett got a hemophilus influenza B vaccine, a Hib vaccine, and his autistic symptoms worsened. She said he started flapping his arms, twirling and spinning. Noise terrified him. He stopped talking. He gagged on his food. He exhibited autistic, compulsive, and hyperactive behaviors. Cindy took Garrett to doctors specializing in learning disabilities, psychology, and hearing and speech disorders, desperately trying to find an answer to why her little boy had changed so dramatically. Cindy was convinced Garrett's symptoms were connected to a biological cause and finally found a pediatrician who performed diagnostic testing, including blood tests. All tests came back negative except one, a blood test showing Garrett had a borderline high rubella titer. Cindy wondered why Garrett's rubella titer would be above normal a year after getting a vaccination. That one clue prompted Cindy to delve into the medical literature on autism, rubella, vaccines, and the immune system. What she found convinced her that just as rubella infection can cause autistic behaviors in children with congenital rubella, so could the live rubella vaccine in the MMR shot cause autistic behaviors. She also suspected that because vaccines were injected directly into the bloodstream, they were capable of interfering with the body's primary immune system, affecting the immunological system and the immunoglobulin G levels that facilitate the absorption of nutrients by the mucosal lining of the gastrointestinal tract. Holding fast to her conviction that the MMR vaccine had caused her son's autistic behavior and that intravenous immune globulin, intravenous infusions, could help boost his IgG levels, heal his primary immune system, and lead to reduced autistic symptoms, she contacted Sudhir Gupta, MD, PhD, University of California, Professor of Medicine and Immunology for help. Gupta confirmed that Garrett had elevated rubella titers as well as a very low IgA and low levels of IgG subclasses. After discussing options with Cindy, Dr. Gupta agreed to give Garrett IgIV infusions, which, because of the known interreaction between the immune and neurological symptoms, might have a restorative effect on his immune and brain dysfunction. IgIV therapy has been given to patients with immunoinflammatory disorders, including demyelinization such as multiple sclerosis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, with the same hope and has some success in some patients. At the same time, Cindy changed Garrett's diet, limiting meat and milk and wheat, and gave him vitamin and nutritional supplements such as acidophilus, globulin protein from whey to enhance the optimal functioning of his immune and gastrointestinal system. Within weeks of the IgIV and nutritional supplement therapy, Cindy saw dramatic improvement in her son's behavior. As Garrett's rubella titer levels came down and his IgG and IgA levels stabilized, Garrett became less and less autistic. He was eventually weaned off the IgIV, but Cindy continued to give him globulin protein from whey, and as well as his vitamins and minerals, and many of the things that he had by age 4 were gone, were the repetitive behaviors and refusal to make eye contact or to speak. Cindy also worked round the clock using behavioral, sensory, integrative speech and audio training therapies to help Garrett catch up to his peers in development. Today,
Garrett is in a regular classroom in a public school system, getting A's, playing in sports, and looking forward to junior high when he can date girls. Cindy, who spoke out in the mid-90s in the print and broadcast media about the role of vaccines in Garrett's autism and how he was cured, gave new hope to a generation of parents of autistic children who had been told there was no cause between vaccines and autism and no cure for autism. In 1996, Dr. Gupta published a study on the beneficial effects of IGIV in children with autistic behaviors who have immune deficiency. Two reports in 1999, one by Dr. Edward Jobsbach, MD, investigated the possibility that mothers may transfer maternal antibodies to rubella either transplacentally or through breast milk to their babies. And when the babies are vaccinated with MMR, some develop an autoimmune reaction with pre-existing rubella antigens that lead to autistic behavior. Jobsbach evaluated the rubella or MMR vaccine's history of 240 mothers of autistic children. He described cases of mothers revaccinated with rubella or MMR vaccine in adulthood before, during, and after pregnancy whose children became autistic after the MMR vaccines. Many of these mothers breastfed their babies. Publication of the complete data is pending. In 1993, and Dr. Vinjandra Singh and associates published a study in which 58% of autistic children tested positive for autoantibodies to myelin basic protein, compared with 9% of age-matched controls with normal health. Idiopathic mental retardation, Down syndrome in normal adults of 20 to 40 years of age. They concluded, quote, "It is possible that autoimmunity may explain a subset of autism, and hypothesized that if an immunological assault, perhaps secondary to a virus infection, were to occur prenatally or postnatally during infancy or early childhood, it could possibly result in poor myelinization or abnormal function than neuroaxon myelination," unquote. In lay language, that what that means is that if your mother was vaccinated with the MMR, or if shortly after birth you're vaccinated, the fact that any virus, including the live viruses in these vaccines, could have the effect of abnormal function of the neuroaxon myelin. In 1998, Singh and his colleagues presented further evidence that a virus-induced autoimmune response involving autoantibodies to myelin basic protein is linked to some cases of autism. It was published in the Clinical Immunology and Immunopathology. Their study compared autistic children to a normal controls and found that although both normal and autistic children have antibodies to measles and human herpes virus 6, many of the autistic children had autoantibodies to MMB and autoantibodies to neuroaxon filament protein, while none of the normal controls did. And by the way, neuroaxon filament protein is a component of nerve fibers. The higher the antibody titers to measles and human herpes 6 in the autistic children, the greater the likelihood that the autistic children also showed brain autoantibodies. The strongest link found in the autistic children was between measles virus antibodies and antibodies to myelin basic protein. The study results suggest that in some individuals, exposure to the measles virus may trigger an autoimmune response that damages or interferes with the development of myelin. Singh and his colleagues observed that, quote, "Although there is no research data, parents of autistic children quite commonly report onset of the disorder shortly after immunization with MMR or DPT, and concluded it is quite possible that the measles infection is an early event of autoimmunity to the MBP and perhaps human herpes 6 infection." Now, considering the mounting scientific evidence that viral and bacterial infections and the vaccines used to prevent them are capable of producing a wide range of immune and neurological dysfunction, It is somewhat strange from a scientific, although not a political standpoint, that a young British gastroenterologist would have been subjected to personal attacks by the medical community when he and 13 colleagues at Royal Free Hospital in London presented evidence in 1998 in The Lancet, the British Medical Journal, February 27th, that measles infection and measles vaccine may be linked to the development of inflammatory bowel disease and autism in previously healthy, normally developing children. Andrew Wakefield, MD, and his team had inadvertently stumbled upon the connection while studying Crohn's disease and other inflammatory bowel diseases in children. The mother of one of Wakefield's young patients, Rosemary Kesick, urged him to look for the biological mechanisms for simultaneous development of the irritable bowel disease and autistic behavior in previously normal children. Dr. Wakefield, in his report, reviewed the medical factors common to an 8 out of 12 previously normal children who simultaneously developed severe intestinal disorders and autistic behavior at the same time. Previously, 5 of those 8 children had reacted adversely to vaccination. All reported onset of symptoms of irritable bowel disorder and autism right after the MMR vaccination. In their discussion of the interaction between the immune system, the nervous system, and gastrointestinal systems of the body, Dr. Wakefield and his associates remarked that Dr. Asper and associates in 1961 had observed that there was a high rate of gastrointestinal celiac disease in those suffering from autism. In 1944, Asper had identified a subgroup of high-functioning borderline autistics. The authors hypothesized that persistent viral infection, either from natural disease or live virus vaccination, can cause chronic inflammation of the bowel and damage to the central nervous system development in some children. They pointed to the opiate excess theory of autism, first suggested by Dr. Panshup in 1979, and then by a Dr. Shadid in 1991, and others, Reiling and Reichert in 1993, that autistic disorders result from the incomplete breakdown and excessive absorption of gut-derived peptides in foods, including barley, rye, oats, casein from milk and dairy products, leading to disruption of normal brain function and development. As these gut-derived peptides get into the blood and cross the blood-brain barrier where they are not supposed to be, they negatively affect the ability of the body to maintain appropriate endorphin, serotonin, and dopamine levels in the brain. The study authors emphasized that they had not proved a cause-and-effect relationship, simply called for more studies to explore the hypothesis. Their report was immediately met with charges by CDC officials that, quote, vaccine safety concerns such as that reported by Wakefield and colleagues may snowball, unquote. And when the public and the media, quote, confuse association with causality and shun immunization, quote, a Reuters Newswire story quoting Dr. Neil Halsey of Johns Hopkins and chair of the American Academy Pediatric Committee on Infectious Diseases saying, quote, is highly inappropriate, unquote, for Wakefield and his colleagues to discuss a possible connection between the children's health problems and measles and mumps vaccines. My question is, why? Why is it inappropriate? Why would any discussion by reasonable scientists who had no agenda outside of helping the children and understand this disease? If you don't have the answer, why should you preclude someone else from looking for an answer where you have not had success? That is purely where science and politics and special interest join together and denying the value of what research had been done by Wakefield. So here is Wakefield, an orthodox doctor. He doesn't propose any alternative opinion. He's not an alternative therapy. He's as orthodox, and his whole colleagues of 13 other are orthodox. The fact that they had made a suggestion based upon, look, here are all these autistic children. They all have these immune reactions. And here's the scientific literature that shows that autism and these vaccines could be associated. They should have explored that. Instead, there was an enormous reaction against it. In fact, at the on all levels, they were digging in to fight Wakefield, try to undermine him. At the second International Autism Conference sponsored by Allergy and Autism in London in March 1999, Dr. Wakefield commented that children with pre-existing immune abnormality may be predisposed to sequestering the measles virus in the gut, and the MMR vaccine prompts them to develop autoimmunity, leading to immune-mediated damage. One of the most compelling regressive autism cases he had recently reviewed in his practice was reminiscent of the days when autism was thought to be a early onset schizophrenia. It was that of a normal, healthy 14-year-old boy who got an MMR shot and within 1 week developed bizarre behavior that was diagnosed as schizophrenia. The link between autism and autoimmunity was further strengthened when a study published in the Journal of Child Neurology in 1999 found a statistically significant correlation between a family history of autoimmune disorders and autism. When comparing the medical histories of families of 61 autistic patients and 46 healthy patients, or healthy controls, the authors discovered, quote, that the subjects who reported two or more family members with autoimmune disorders were twice as likely to have autism. Those with at least three family members with autoimmune disorders were five times as more likely to have autism, and those whose mothers had autoimmune disorders were eight times more likely to be affected. Dr. Comey and her associates added, quote, the percentage of family members with adult rheumatoid arthritis, systemic lupus, and the category of connective tissue autoimmune disorders were greater in the autism group than in controls and approached statistical significance in these cases. They suggested that perhaps, quote, individuals with autism inherit a genetic predisposition for autoimmunity that, in conjunction with medical triggers or other environmental factors, results in developmental and neurological pathology, unquote. It is known that some autoimmune disorders are associated with genes of the most histocompatibility complex, or what is called MHC. And the MHC is made up of hundreds of genes, some of which are involved in helping cells of the immune system work together to resist infection and recognize the body's own tissue. If these genes become damaged or abnormally rearranged from exposure to viruses or bacteria or chemical toxins, they can cripple the body's defenses against some infections or cause the immune system to mistakenly attack the body's own tissues. For example, this is the genetic autoimmune mechanism involved in diabetes when the immune system attacks cells in the pancreas. In 1991, Reed Warren and Dr. Singh and others published a study in Clinical Experimental Immunology which found that what is called the null allele, meaning deficient form, of the complement C4B gene located in the class 3 region of the MMR complex occurred more than twice as often in autistic individuals as in those who are normal. In a 1994 study, Warren and his colleagues hypothesized that human subjects inherited one or two of these C4B null alleles may not be able to clear certain viruses completely before the virus infects the central nervous system. By the way, that is then the whole idea of what causes these problems in the central nervous system. In 1995, the vaccine reaction reported that California microbiologist Dr. Howard Yernovitz criticized the Defense Department for administering multiple vaccinations to soldiers headed for the Gulf War, including cholera, live oral polio, typhoid fever, meningitis, pertussis, tetanus, diphtheria, yellow fever, recombinant hepatitis B, influenza, and two experimental vaccines, anthrax and botulism, as well as an experimental drug, which is a bromide. Now, Yernovitz maintained that the multiple vaccinations weaken the soldiers' immune systems, making them more vulnerable to environmental toxins and opportunistic infections encountered in the Gulf War, causing tens of thousands to become chronically ill with Gulf War syndrome, which includes symptoms such as chronic muscle and joint pain, rashes, headaches, disabling fatigue, memory loss, inability to concentrate, personality changes, diarrhea, hair loss, and sleep disturbances. Yernovitz, who is also an expert on contamination of polio vaccines with SV40, which is the simian virus 40, and the simian immunodeficiency virus, published a study in 1999 in Clinical and Diagnostic Laboratory Immunology that found that abnormal RNA in the blood of 50% of sick Gulf War veterans and none in the age and sex match healthy non-military controls, and the presence of abnormal RNA in the blood can indicate the chromosomal change has occurred. The RNA found in the sick Gulf War veterans is encoded by genetic material that occurs only in regions of chromosome 22, which is uniquely susceptible to genetic rearrangement and mutations. Damage to chromosome 22q11-1 has been linked with autoimmune diseases such as juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, thrombocytopenia, and multiple myeloma cancer. And your Nonovitz is especially concerned about the effects of genotoxic events. He said, quote, when the body is subjected to toxic events such as exposure to viruses and bacteria and drugs and chemicals and radiation, there appears to be a molecular memory. The human chromosome may be able to take just so many toxic exposures before it begins to break down. Certain genotypes may be particularly at risk for sustaining chromosomal damage after exposure to toxic events. This makes it important to limit exposures, including being more selective with vaccine use and finding ways to identify and pre-screen for those who may be at high risk of chromosomal damage. Well, of course, nobody was pre-screened. It didn't matter what your background, what your race, what illnesses you had had. Everyone was given the same massive amounts of vaccine. The goal of limiting toxic exposure was advanced in July of 1999 when a joint statement was issued by the U.S. Public Health Service and the American Academy of Pediatrics supporting the FDA's directive to the vaccine manufacturers to eliminate mercury in the form of thimerosal, a preservative, from vaccines. Mercury is a known neurotoxin which can cross the placenta and brain-blood barrier and concentrate in the brain and blood, but can also affect the immune system, the kidneys, and the lungs. DPT, DPTH, tetanus, DT, TB, influenza, meningococcal, and other vaccines, including hepatitis B and DTAP, contain thimerosal, and live virus cells do not. The total amount of mercury that babies under 6 months old have been exposed to in childhood vaccines has exceeded the Environmental Protection Agency limit. Both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC have recommended that there be a limit to mercury exposure. And newborns born unfortunately, and then getting this vaccine have been particularly at risk of these conditions. Aluminum is another additive in vaccines that is known as a neurotoxin and may increase the ability of toxins to cross the blood-brain barrier. Other vaccine additives include antibiotics, formaldehyde, monosodium glutamate, and sulfites. And some autistic children have been found to have high levels of mercury in their hair, as well as heavy metals such as aluminum and lead in their blood, and have had detoxification therapy to cleanse the system of these metals, which has led to significant improvements in their behavior in some children. With the understanding that regressive autism has biological, particularly immunological, roots, and that autistic behavior sometimes can be eliminated or modified through dietary and other immune-modulating therapies, innovative treatment programs are being explored by doctors caring for autistic children. Doctors who are members of Defeat Autism Now, or DAN, such as Dr. William Shaw, Dr. Sidney Baker, Dr. Stephanie Cave, have reduced autistic behaviors with individually tailored therapies that may include limiting sugars, casein, dairy, wheat, meat, and using appropriate nutritional therapies, vitamin C, calcium, folic acid, vitamin B6, zinc, niacin, and helping to rebalance the brain chemistry. Virginia pediatrician Dr. Mary Megson has treated children injured by the DPT vaccine who have a G-alpha protein defect with natural forms of vitamin A. And secretin, a hormone derived from pig intestines which stimulates the pancreas to produce gastric juices, has also shown promise for reversing autistic behaviors in some children. And other doctors are using neuroimaging techniques to measure blood flow in different parts of the brain in order to tailor nutritional and drug therapies for children with autism. And so things are happening. Parents are organizing. There are organizations out there that people can belong to, like Cure Autism Now Foundation and the National Alliance of Autism Research and the Southwest Autism Research Institute and the Autism Autoimmunity Project and FEAT, which is the large group of development delay resource. So you do have people who are doing a lot. Congress is looking at vaccines. Private research is going on. So in summary today of this particular report, there is an enormous amount of material. My own report is just my summary of my report, which is on my webpage, GaryNall.com. There is a public service with all my notes. And by the way, I do not break the flow of my commentary by giving you the hundreds of scientific citations from mainstream scientific journals to show you that there's good evidence to support all these statements. But it's there. So this is not some speculative nonsense from people who are angry at authority figures or who are trying to take advantage of some condition in their child and say that it's related to vaccines. We're talking about millions of children who have been affected. And these effects range all over the board. And we can now look at how vaccines can contribute to cancer. In my next report, I'm going to look at vaccines and cancer and vaccines and other conditions as well. And for those mainstream guardians of the gates of orthodoxy, who instead of looking at autism and looking at diseases in children and looking at the enormous increases in all these and saying, we don't have the answers, so we should open ourselves up to have everything that we're capable of understanding being reviewed and expanded upon. Instead, they say, keep vaccinating, add more vaccines to the list. Don't even consider the immature immune systems of your babies. Don't even consider the contaminants within the vaccines, all as well at the CDC and FDA. And I just want to remind you, it's that same FDA that was responsible for giving the green light to thalidomide and has also supported in just one 10-year period, according to the Office of Technology Assessment and General Accounting Office, 50% of the drugs that they approved as safe and effective had to be recalled or relabeled as ineffective or dangerous. Not a good record. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you very much for listening today to Vaccines, A Second Opinion, Part 6.